According to our next guest, feminism is having a capital M moment. What should we make of the fact that feminism has gone mainstream? Does it mean that we've reached a critical mass tipping point and the trickle-down true political equality for women is on the horizon? Or does all this simply mean that feminism has sold out? These are questions at the heart of Andy Zeisler's new book, We Were Feminists Once, From Riot Girl to Cover Girl, The Buying and Selling of a Political Movement. In this examination of modern-day feminism, Zeisler, who's founder and creative director of Bitch Magazine, argues that pop culture has co-opted the movement and transformed it into something unrecognizable. Again, the title of the book is We Were Feminists Once, and we welcome Andy Zeisler to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you to this particular subject?
Well, this is the work I've been doing for the past 20 years. I founded the organization Bitch Media, which looks at popular culture and media through a feminist and gender-aware and race-aware lens. So our mission has always been to sort of take popular culture seriously as a locus of, you know, feminism and social change and progressivism. And so over the years, you know, I've really been paying attention to and studying and writing about the way that feminism has become both more and more integrated into sort of regular life as this kind of, you know, ambient theme. But at the same time, it's also become much more liable to be co-opted to sell things. And just in the past few years, I feel like that dynamic has really, really ramped up.
So what you're saying does not exactly mean acceptance, does it?
Not really. I mean, to me, it almost seems like at, you know, at this current time, there's kind of two parallel spheres going on within feminism. One is, you know, the real grassroots, politically and socially focused stuff that's always been sort of under the radar, that really is focusing on sort of foundational issues that have not been touched by sort of neoliberal feminism. And we're talking about, you know, poverty and reproductive justice and, you know, workplace safety and family leave and things like that. But then on the other hand, there's this very glossy kind of feel-good, often promoted by celebrities and advertising kind of feminism, which is really more about this nebulous idea of empowerment. But that's the sexier version of feminism, and it's more fun, and it's more positive. So obviously that's the one that's going to sort of get the most play, because it really does allow us to feel like, oh, well, we really have come a long way. You know, it really encourages looking at the way we'd like things to be rather than the way, in many cases, they actually are.
You point out in the book, and the case you're making here, is that pop culture has co-opted the modern-day feminist movement and transformed it. Give us some examples of things that we could see in pop culture that show what you're talking about.
Right. Well, I mean, certainly I think a lot of celebrity conversations around feminism, and certainly those that are happening even in politics right now, where feminism is sort of defined as you know, supporting women at any cost and believing in all women, even though they may actually be promoting, you know, products or policies that are actually harmful to women. I mean, Carly Fiorina sort of trying to rebrand herself as a feminist and defining that as, you know, being a woman who does what she chooses to do. Well, that's great if you're a woman who already has choices, but most people don't. I think Sheryl Sandberg is another one. And it's not that I don't think that, you know, her advice is worthwhile for the women she's talking to, but it also really erases just a huge swath of people. I mean, she's basically saying, you know, let's lean in, but what about the women who are, you know, nannies and housekeepers and cooks? Why don't they get to lean in? Why is the liberation of elite women predicated on the essential subordination of other women? those are some dynamics we see. And then we've also always, in some ways, seen it in advertising. I mean, as long as there have been feminist movements, there have been institutions like advertising that are, you know, very, very eager to sort of co-opt them and defang them by making it just about what you can purchase.
You point out in the book that when asked to define the word feminism, that individuals are as likely to say that it's about choice as they are to say it's about equality.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a feature of what I call marketplace feminism, which really is this feminism that's kind of like a, you know, it's like a buffet. You can like pick and choose from different ideologies and different, you know, emotions or priorities that you like and sort of discard the ones that you don't. And that may be individually empowering. It may be good for you personally, but it really doesn't, it's a little bit antithetical to the point of feminism, which is really, you know, the gender equality of everyone. If it's just about one person's personal liberation, that can't go very far.
So with Madeleine Albright saying there's a special place in hell for women who do not support other women who are running for president, what does that say to us?
Yeah, I mean, that basically says, you know, it's sort of a guilt trip. It's sort of saying that, you know, feminism is about supporting other women at any cost. And that's a ridiculous thing to say, especially when you consider that women are more than, you know, 50% of the population, and we are not a singular body. We do not think with one brain. We don't all have the same priorities. So by saying something like that, it's really flattening the diversity and the scope of who women are. I mean, I can't imagine a male politician saying that about other men, because we understand men as a class to have all sorts of different beliefs and all sorts of different priorities. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly a statement that I don't get behind.
But you understand it, right? You understand the intention there.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the first time Madeleine Albright said that, she wasn't saying it in the context of Hillary Clinton,
right,
and a political race. I take her point. In so many ways, we do share a struggle, but I think it's sort of a very reductive thing to say, especially when, you know, we're often talking about supporting women who want to, you know, legislate other women's bodies, or who, you know, don't want to support education for young women. I think we really do have to sort of, as a culture, think about what we're asking when we ask women to sort of blindly support one another simply because we share a gender.
So the name of the book is We Were Feminists Once. So what are you now?
I should just say that, you know, when you're publishing a book these days, it's a pretty crowded marketplace. You have to kind of try to stand out.
Publishers be provocative,
want you to say something,
sure.
Yeah. A little bit provocative. So it certainly wasn't, you know, my first choice. All of my titles were deemed incredibly boring. But you know, the more I think about it, the more I really do feel that there's an important point there, which is that, you know, when everything becomes feminism, what is feminism? And we are at that point where, especially if you look at sort of mainstream media, the word feminism and the word feminist have become sort of used as this kind of content seasoning to get eyeballs, to get clicks on material. It's not unlike how the words like environmentalism and green were used 10 years ago in sort of the same way, to get attention, to sell products, to draw people's eyeballs in a really mediated world. I certainly think we are still very much feminist, but at the same time, we're also at the risk of that word becoming increasingly meaningless as it's applied more broadly and indiscriminately to everything.
You say in the book, the problem is what it has always been. Feminism is not fun. It's not supposed to be fun. It's complex and hard, and it pisses people off. Do you change that, or is that exactly the way you want it?
Well, I mean, I think certainly at a base level, that's true. I absolutely think that feminism can be fun. It can be really entertaining. And we certainly see that in the fact that things like television and culture in other ways has become increasingly feminist. And by that, I mean we see a greater range of creators, we see a greater range of representations, and we see a greater range of lenses on things like the patriarchy. I mean, if you look at last summer's Mad Max, Fury Road, that movie was a real indictment of patriarchy in a very indelible way. And I think once you start looking, it's really easy to see how these kinds of interrogations of masculine or patriarchal culture have become much more commonplace, and that's great. At the same time, I don't think we can use those as a way to say, look how far we've come, I think we've made it, I think we're done with feminism. Because again, there are these really foundational issues that require both, you know, legal and policy change, but also a real change in social views and in how we think about things. And that's really hard work, and it's certainly always been hard work, and it's part of why feminism has such a bad kind of optic legacy, because we often, and I'm including myself and in this, we often don't want to see things that seem like such an uphill climb. It's much easier to focus on what's fun and what seems positive and what seems like it's working.
So as we wrap up, let's talk about that uphill climb. You say in the book that you're much less interested in who labels themselves feminist and more interested in what they're doing with feminism. So where does your optimism lie in that doing with feminism?
Well, I mean, because I work in feminist media, I think I have a pretty optimistic lens on this because, you know, I travel to colleges and universities a lot, and I speak to young women. We have heard there's been this sort of media party line over the past decade or so that young women aren't interested in feminism, and I can, you know, say with extreme confidence that that's absolutely not true. There is a ton of kind of grassroots groundswell of young women and young men, for that matter, who really are interested in feminism, and they're interested in feminism as it intersects with a lot of other social issues, you know, race and prison reform and environmentalism, and, you know, food rights and things like that. And this may not be, again, this may not be a sexy story for the mainstream media because it doesn't look like the kind of easy target feminism that the media has been making fun of for decades, but it's meaningful, and it is, you know, it is transformatory, and it has a lot of potential. And so, you know, for me, that's certainly where a lot of my optimism about the future comes from.
The name of the book is We Were Feminists Once, From Riot Girl to Cover Girl, The Buying and Selling of a Political Movement. Andy Zeisler, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Again, the title of the book is We Were Feminists Once. The book is published by Public Affairs. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.